Good afternoon. It is 3:27 p.m. We are here today, July 9th, 2020, in the OPA hearing room.
No, I'm not hearing that.
We are here today, July 9th, 2020, in the OPA hearing room, Suite 907 of the DNA building in Hagatnik, Guam, for the formal hearing continuation of OPAPA 19-010 and 20-001. Glide Path Marianas Operations, Inc. versus the Guam Power Authority. Presiding over the hearing today is Public Auditor Benjamin J.F. Cruz. For the record, also present from the Office of Public Accountability are Jared Hernandez and Vince Duenas. Will appellant Glide Path please identify themselves and any institutional representatives present for the record?
Good afternoon, Mr. Public Auditor, on this fourth day. My name is Joshua Walsh, along with Joseph Rosano. We represent the appellant, GlidePath, in this matter. Present in the room is Institutional Representative Peter Root, who's behind me, and I do believe we have Aaron Hazen from the company on the team's call as well.
Thank you. Will Purchasing Agency GPA please identify themselves and any institutional representatives present for the record?
Yes, Graham Booth, GPA General Counsel, on behalf of GPA, on the left is Ms. Teresa Dantiaco, Assistant General Manager for Administration, Institutional Representative for GPA.
Thank you. Will interested party NG Solar please identify themselves and any institutional representatives present for the record?
Good afternoon, this is R. Marcial Johnson, my co-counsel Anita Areola on behalf of NG Solar. The institutional representative present here is Darren Mingo. Via Teams, we have Matteo Leonetti and Katrina Canabite.
Thank you. We may proceed.
At this time, NG will call.
Your Honor, actually, if we could have a few housekeeping matters before we get started, would that be all right?
Sure.
Okay. So we filed a motion to stay the proceeding today because we had not received some of the supplemental record that was discussed during the original testimony. What Mr. Botha handed us, about 100 pages, double-sided, of a supplemental record today, or just now, before the hearing. So it's probably roughly, I mean, I'm guessing because it's not numbered, but I'm guessing it's about 200 pages of material. So I'm not sure that the motion really is to stay now as more as it is to get a little bit of time to review that supplemental record prior to us having to determine whether we're going to call rebuttal witnesses or not based on the new material that we haven't reviewed. I'm not suggesting that if Angie wants to go forward with their witness today that they feel they want to, they can. But if they want to review the record and figure out if there's anything in there that they want to discuss with their witness, then I would have no objection to that. If they want to move forward, I'd have no objection to that. So I think if we could get about, you know, we have to circulate this to this team that we have, so if we could get about 10 days to determine whether we need a rebuttal witness, that would be appreciated. I don't want these witnesses to have to stay here on Guam if they don't choose to. So in the event that we decided we did want a rebuttal witness, we would say maybe we should have like written closing arguments, maybe limited to say 10 pages so that it doesn't become an onerous thing for to read. And then maybe thereafter, maybe 10 calendar days after that, as long as it doesn't fall on a Saturday or Sunday, findings of fact and conclusions of law. And then that would conclude the procurement record or procurement hearings. Thank you.
Okay. Chief here.
Thank you. You know, Mr. Rosano did request the emails. I had to sort through the emails because, as Mr. Vernon gave testified, there were other emails not relevant to this proceeding but dealt with our other studies, so I did get the emails there. Although this seems like a lot, basically the drafts that were attached to some of the emails and comments that were there, I'm not sure that it should take that long to go through, but I certainly leave it up to that. I did the best, Your Honor, as swiftly as I could to review those emails to make sure they were pertinent to the case at hand and not other studies that were not relevant or part of the case. So I'm not sure why it would take that long, but I may leave it to your judgment for that.
Okay. we echo GPA sentiment that we don't think it would take that long to review of it. There's a couple drafts and a few emails. It doesn't seem like it would take that long to go ahead and do a review of it. I'm not sure I followed exactly what Mr. Rosano's proposed schedule was for this, or why there would only be written closing arguments instead of oral closing arguments.
Well, we can do the oral closing. I just thought that if your client's not here, it's not a jury trial.
Sure, sure.
That means you'd like an oral
argument. I just didn't follow the 10 days. Was it another 10 days? And then
what I was suggesting was to clarify my proffer was that if we wanted a rebuttal, then we would call the rebuttal, and that would be the end, or maybe you would have rebuttal, I don't know. But whenever the proceeding concludes, that within 3 days of the closing of the proceeding, you could submit a written closing that would be limited to, you know, say 10 pages or whatever the public auditor says, just so that it's not like a huge brief, but it's, you know, it
okay.
gives you an opportunity to say, here's what the facts were, and here's how we saw it, and here, you know what I mean?
Understood.
And then 10 days after that, brief is filed, findings of fact and conclusions of law to be submitted with maybe a remedies brief to the public auditor, which would close the proceeding.
Okay.
You know, nothing else to do after that.
I guess that might respond. I don't see the need for the 10 days, but we'll leave it up to you.
Okay, just so everybody knows, you've asked for tomorrow morning off because of a need to do something. I have a meeting scheduled at 2:00 tomorrow afternoon, so we wouldn't be able to go back on Tuesday. My staff has a training on Monday, so I won't have a staff on Monday. So I was going to have us come back on Tuesday if we were going to do anything at all. So that just so that we lay everything out on the table of where everybody's at and what everybody needs to do in the next couple of days. And then after Tuesday, I could resume wherever we're at that point. That should give you enough time over the weekend to determine if you need a rebuttal to address this. And maybe even close on Tuesday if you wanted to, and then submit your written closing and your findings of fact and conclusions of law thereafter.
That would be fine.
Okay.
That would be fine.
Okay.
Yep.
So you have no problem with us proceeding today and taking...
No, I mean, it's completely up to them. If they want to, I don't want to prejudice them, so I want it to be their choice. If they want to go forward, that's fine. If they don't want to, I'm happy to come back and let them digest the materials and handle the witness any way they'd like.
Well, we prefer to just move forward today.
Okay, then go ahead.
You caught it.
Yes, we call Dario Filiotti, the next witness.
Mr. Filiotti, could you please state your name and spell it for the record?
Può dire il suo nome e fare l'appellazione per la trascrizione?
Yes, my name is Dario Filiotti, D-A-R-I-O-G-I-G-L-I-O-T-T-I.
Please raise your right hand.
E alzi la mano destra.
Do you solemnly swear or affirm that the testimony you are about to give will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
Lei giura che la testimonianza.
Yes, I do.
All right, thank you.
Okay, thank you. Dario, where do you work?
I work at NGEPS.
What is your job title at NGEPS?
My job title is System Engineer.
And how many years have you worked at NGEPS?
Almost 5 years.
Where did you go to college?
I went to the college in Italy. I graduated Polytechnic of Turin, in Italy, in energy engineering in 2013. It was a bachelor degree, and then after that I also on the Master of Science in Energy and Nuclear Engineering, again Polytechnic of Turin in 2015. And Polytechnic of Turin, by the way, is the oldest technical university in Italy, and together with the Polytechnic of Milano is the most important technical university in Italy and one of the most important in Europe.
Okay. Where did you go to work after school?
At that time, I started working at EPS, that then was acquired in 2018 by ENGIE, and now it's ENGIE EPS.
Okay. Now, you mentioned that you were a systems engineer at ENGIE EPS. What types of systems do you work on?
Yeah, as a system engineer, I work on project basis. It means that I focus on project. And depending on which is the status of the project, my role depends on which is the status of the project. For instance, before a project is awarded, so for instance during the bidding phase, in order to prepare, in order to submit the bid, my role is like a technical support function. So during a bid preparation, I am responsible for the design of the system, especially for the ESS. And so design, make sure that our design is compliant with the requirements, make sure that we are doing an optimal system so that we can propose a competitive offer, and collect all the technical documentation that needed for bid submission. Okay.
After a bid is submitted, and say if ENGIE were to win a bid, does your job change then, or do you continue to work on the project?
Yeah, after the award, I continue working on the project, and then my role is more focused on detail engineering. So as system engineer for a project that is under construction, I'm the responsible for the design, so detailed design, for instance, design for permitting, design for construction. And as system engineer, I will be the commissioning manager for the project. It means that I will be on site for the project, on site to be responsible to make sure that our system is well designed and is able to pass all the commissioning tests needed to close the commissioning phase, after which the client accept the project.
You mentioned commissioning. What do you mean by commissioning?
Yeah, commissioning is a list of tests that are done on site in order to prove that our the system that we are built is able to meet all the requirements, as is able to meet all the functional requirements. So we need to show, for instance, the expected behavior of the system. So there is a list of tests that can be done together with the client to show that the system is well designed. And if all the commissioning tests are positively passed, then the project is accepted by the client.
Okay. So what projects have you worked on then during your time at ENGIE EPS?
Yeah, worked on many projects during my almost 5 years of experience. Just to mention the most important one, I think the first one was not the actual first project, but is the first one that I would like to mention. That is the Littoral Power Plant. It's a 20 megawatt ESS in Littoral, that is in Spain, so in Europe. This ESS is a standalone project as an ESS, coupled with a thermoelectric power plant, that is a coal power plant in Spain. It was a 20 megawatt project, and I worked until expression of interest for the bid, until the bid submission in the 2017. At that time, this 20 megawatt project was one of the biggest projects in Europe. And the client was Enel. Enel is the biggest utility in Italy, one of the most important utilities worldwide. It has a lot of, it's present in Europe, also in South America. And then, I mean, then the system was commissioned in 2018, and now it's currently working.
Okay. Have you worked on any projects in the United States?
Yes, I'm currently working on a project that is in California. It's in ANZA, A-N-Z-A. It's in California. It's a microgrid, actually. It means it is renewable plus ESS. And then we are also providing, so together with another subsidiary of ENGIE, that is ENGIE Services US, we are providing the PV capacity. It's a 4 megawatt PV with the 4 megawatt hour ESS and the microgrid controller. It means that we are supplying, let me say, the controller of the whole microgrid, and that can be one of the requirements is that this microgrid can be disconnected from the main grid and can be in off-grid operating mode. And we are providing microgrid controller, and the overall microgrid is a 12 megawatt microgrid as a load.
Have you worked on any projects in the Pacific?
Yes, I do. I work on mainly on PV plus storage project in the Pacific, in what we call APAC region, that is the southeast plus all the islands in the Pacific. For instance, I work on the Palau project. I work on the Palau project starting from 2018. Prepare a bid for this project. It is still under review by the client, so it's still not awarded. It's a 16 megawatt PV project with ESS. Then, of course, I start working on one project, and more importantly, I work also on the Hawaii project. From in 2019, so I was also the leading engineer in for the web project that we recently awarded this year, so in 2020. Especially this project was, it's quite important because the Hawaii project that is let me say phase two of an already closed tender closed in the 2018. So this phase two. I mean, it was the most important tender for the renewable plus ESS. I think that the total procure capacity for the PV and ESS was like almost 3 gigawatt hour for the ESS and more than 500 megawatt of PV capacity. So we award, was notified by the utility, that's ECO, the ENGIE has been awarded for a 60 megawatt project, 240 megawatt hour. So 60 megawatt PV, 240 megawatt hour ESS. That is, I mean, in terms of size, if we look at the two projects together in one, so Naval Base plus South Finnegayan, this Hawaii project is like similar in size, almost equal to the two projects together. So the sum of the two. It was a very good reference because, I mean, in terms of competitiveness of this project, in terms of also similar context in Hawaii, because it's an island in the Pacific, it's Hawaii, it's U.S. territory. It was a very important project with a lot of similar requirements for the Hawaii project, because also Hawaii, it was a total time-shifting project, and so it was a very good reference.
Now, I want to talk about the Guam project right now. What was your role in the Guam project, at least in preparing ENGIE's technical proposal?
My role was to be the leading engineer during the bid preparation. So I started working on Guam project in January 2019 until the bid submission. So as a lead engineer, again, I was responsible to design the ESS part of the system and make sure that our design is fully compliant with the requirements in the IFB. Make sure that we are proposing to GPA a competitive job offer, so we work a lot on the optimization of this project, and then collect all the technical information that was then submitted in the UNPRISE technical proposal in June 2019.
Okay, Mars, I don't want to interrupt you.
Sure.
Could you just confirm for me that when he's looking down, it's just he's looking down and he doesn't have any notes or
okay.
a computer or anything in front of him?
Sure. Daniela, we're just making sure. Oh, sorry, Dario. Just to make sure, for opposing counsel, is there anything on the desk in front of you?
I have a desk with the. With the exhibit list. I mean, it's a laptop.
Okay.
Okay. That's fine. Thank you.
Okay. So, during your work in preparing or helping prepare NG's technical proposal, did that require you to come to Guam?
Yes, I visited Guam twice in 2019. The aim of the visit was mainly to, meet foreign subcontractors, engineering firm, make sure that there is the capability for the contractor to provide a design and a quote for, especially for the ESS part of the system. So make sure that there is enough know-how, because we receive from contractors quote and we base our offer on that quote. So. I just wanted to make sure that there is enough understanding of the requirements of the technical specification for the ESS.
Okay. Did you read the entire invitation for bid put out by GPA?
Yes, I did.
Did you read all the amendments to the invitation for bid?
Yes.
Okay. Just to confirm, does the term megawatt peak, spelled capital M, capital W, lowercase p, show up at all in the invitation for bid?
No, megawatt peak was not present in the IFB.
Okay, and what about the amendments?
Neither in the amendments.
Okay. Now, there are a few requirements we've been discussing throughout the course of this hearing. And I'd like to go over what we've been referring to as requirement number one, which involves the maximum export capacity at the interconnection point. Do you know what the maximum capacity at the interconnection point was required to be?
Mr.
Yes, it's 30 megawatt AC at point of interconnection.
Please stop, there's been an objection. Yes.
I mean, we went through the three requirements in the trial brief with his, I think it's his boss yesterday. Assuming that the testimony is not going to be the same as yesterday, it's not going to be cumulative and duplicative. So, what are we going to talk about today?
Well, as Mr. Rosado pointed out during the testimony of Mr. Rosati yesterday, he wasn't the one who put this actual technical proposal together. We have Mr. Gigliotti, who actually did put this invitation to bid together, who actually did come to law. So, I just want to confirm that Angie. The requirements for the invitation for bid, and so I'm just going to go over the technical proposal with him to make sure that we cross the T's and not the I's to show that they answered those requirements of the invitation for bid.
That's the same thing they did yesterday. I mean, he talked about all three requirements. The brief is broken into three requirements. He said the same thing he said yesterday, that the first requirement of 30 megawatts AC was met. I mean, it's the same testimony. He hasn't said anything different than Mr. I don't want to get his name wrong, but Mr. Rossetti did yesterday. So far, anyway.
We're going to go into more detail.
Right, get into more detail.
Okay.
Just as long as we don't have the foundation issues.
We need to get into more detail.
Yeah, I just, it's the same thing I heard yesterday. I heard about all these projects yesterday.
Okay, look, if it doesn't improve, we'll readdress it.
Okay. So, Mr. Gigliotti, so what was the maximum export capacity at the interconnection point for this invitation?
was 30 megawatt AC at interconnection point per site.
Okay. Did NG's technical proposal mention this in their invitation for bid?
Yes.
Okay. I'm going to bring up an exhibit. I'm going to share my screen now. Please let me know if you can see it. Sorry, could you ping his frame so we can see him and answer some questions? Dario, can you see this document?
Yes, you can.
Still see it?
Yes.
Okay, do you recognize this document?
Yes, this is our unpriced proposal.
Okay. Does it mention the maximum capacity, the interconnection point, or the export capacity at the interconnection point?
Yeah, yes, it's mentioned. Yeah, actually, it's the first bullet point in this section. So the first bullet point is maximum export capacity of 30 megawatt AC at 34.5 kV. And there is also the reference of the requirement in the IFB page 52.
Okay. And the sentence before it, what does that say?
Sorry, could you repeat?
The sentence before it, what does that say?
La precedente, la frase precedente.
Yeah, the system has been sized to ensure compliance with the polyvalve constraints. So here we, just confirm in our proposal that our system, our design is compliant with the requirements of the IFB, and we listed the main requirements that we just extrapolate from the IFB.
Okay. So is this the same for both of these submissions by NG?
Yes, correct. It's practically the same.
Okay. I'd like to go over the second requirement, which has been referred to as by GlidePath as the 145% requirement. Are you familiar with that?
Yes.
Okay. I'd like to point out another. Sorry, just for the record, that was page 2397 of 12444 of the procurement record. I'd like to go to another portion of NG's unpriced technical proposal. This is procurement record page 2447 of 12444. Is the second requirement of the invitation for bid mentioned on this page?
Yes, it's mentioned as it's in the top of the page I think if you could just a minute, okay? I think it's one, two, is the third paragraph, so the
Sorry,
plan
please,
is this.
Could you please stop?
Yeah.
I'll stipulate that this gentleman can read everything in Angie's report.
There's a couple things I want to point out here, specifically to the questions that were asked yesterday, Your Honor, if you just give me some leeway.
I'll allow it. It's different pages. I want to know what they're.
Okay.
This is too.
You want to know for sure, then, please.
So where is there a reference to requirement number two in this invitation? Sorry, on this page.
Yeah, it's the third paragraph. So the plan is designed to charge the BESS, that means ESS, with the maximum combined power rate of 20.7 megawatt, and to discharge it up to 30 megawatt at the delivery point. And then in the following paragraph, the megawatt rating of the ESS shall be equal to or greater than the 145% of the megawatt rating of the PV charging system. And then there is a reference to the requirement number two that is in the amendment 13, page 460.
Okay, it was posited yesterday, or was proposed yesterday, that the NG unpriced technical proposal did not contain the term PV charging system. Is the phrase PV charging system used on this page?
Yes, it's used. I just read the exact wording, and so it's the fourth paragraph. So the megawatt rating of the ESS should be equal to greater than the 145 of the megawatt rating of the PV charging system.
Okay.
I'm going to object.
Sure.
First of all, it misstates the testimony from yesterday, and all that is a regurgitation of the requirement from Amendment 13, which is why it's cited there. Posited yesterday was, when did they start calling this a PV charging system? And the answer, respectfully, from Mr. Dario's boss was, it's not there, because they never used that term. This is GPA's term.
So I think that misstates the testimony, Your Honor. The key thing to pay attention to here is that these values, meaning the values in this sentence here, have been selected in compliance with the following tender requirement. And then the term PV charging system is used there. This is really all we're trying to point out.
If you're trying to point out that you copied GPA's sentence and stuck it in your proposal, I stipulate to that.
Well, the issue here in this appeal is whether GlidePath followed the requirements of the invitation for bid. And these two sentences show that that Engie, in its unpriced technical proposal, stated specifically that it followed this requirement, which is why it quoted that requirement there and stated that these values have been selected in compliance with the following tender requirement. So it's directly relevant to the issues before the public auditor in this appeal.
I've stated my objection clearly. I mean,
I've read
the GPA report.
Continue.
Sure. I'd just like to go on to the next requirement then, Dario. So the next requirement, as we've all discussed here, has to do with maximization of the amount of capacity available on each site. Are you familiar with that requirement?
Yes, it's a requirement contained in the Amendment 13.
Okay. Did Engie maximize the amount of capacity available on each site?
Yes, we maximize, I mean, we try to maximize as much as possible our land, our site, in order to maximize the PV capacity. We have done a great job, doing a lot of iterative process to define which is the best, for instance, technical configuration for the PV, the best capacity, and then for each of them, we evaluate which is the optimal ESS capacity, and then we verify which is the impact on the tariff, so on the economics. At the end, we landed to a design in which we have an east-west configuration for the PV. It means that this east-west configuration, in the PV field, is not faced toward the south, but are faced, half of it is faced toward the east, and the other half toward the west. This east-west configuration is typically not used in a standard, let me say, PV plant because it's not the one that maximizes the production from the PV. But in this case, useful because the east-west configuration is the one minimize the amount of hectares needed in order to install your PV. So with this configuration, we was able to maximize the amount of PV capacity in our site. Now to site.
Okay. Did you look at the other unpriced technical proposals of the other bidders? Have you read them?
Yeah, I did.
Did you look at the maximum, the megawatt peak that was planned to be installed by the other bidders?
Yes. I looked for each bidder and for each site, and I realized that that all bidders except Glypath proposed more than 20.7 megawatt peak. In at least one site. So, for instance, AS, if I remember correctly, proposed more than 20.7, also the Finnegaia. KEPCO proposed more than 20.7, both as on Finnegaia and Naval Base Guam. Exelio proposed more than 20.7 at Naval Base Guam, while Glypath was the only one to propose less than 20.7. I think that actually it was 20.6 megawatt peak, both as on Finnegaia and Naval Base.
Okay. Did you summarize these amounts anywhere?
Yeah, there is a table in our exhibit list in the slide we prepare. There is a table with summarizing the main figures. First one? Okay, previous one.
Okay. First, before we go into this, though, is there an error in this table?
Yeah, there is a mistake for the Excelio. The value are correct, but they are just shift between Naval Finnegaia and Naval Base. So the value that we see here for Naval Finnegaia is actually the value for Naval Base and vice versa.
Okay. Aside from that, are the numbers accurate?
Yeah.
Okay.
Correct.
So, I guess, which parties exceeded 20.7 megawatt peak?
Yeah, as I was saying before, KEPCO, for instance, we can look at the values. KEPCO proposed 20.106 as of Finnegaia, so more than 20.7, proposed 21 at Naval Base, so more than 20.7. AES proposed 23.5 as South Finnegaia, it is of course more than 20.7. Excelio almost 25, so 24.9 at Naval Base. So here is an increase this we need to adjust. And Engie proposed 26.4 at South Finnegaia and 27.6 at Naval Base. And Glypath was the only one proposed less than 20.7 at both sides.
Did you also take a look at the prices that were bid by the parties?
Yes, sure.
Did you provide a summary of those as well?
The price, I'm not sure if it's in this slide. I remember, for instance, that... There is a slide. Please, one.
Yes.
Okay.
So you're familiar with
this is a table showing the price for the two sites, price in terms of dollar per megawatt hour for the two sites for each bidders. So we propose, as Engie proposed, 108.9 as of Finnegaia, that is dollar per megawatt hour, and our basic was 110.9. and the dollar per megawatt hour. Then there is the second lower bid, that is AS. They propose $152 per megawatt hour Asan Phil Gaian and $161 on our base. Then Celio Glypath was actually the fourth one. Then there is an alternative offer from Glypath that is equal to Celio, and then Capco. So there is Engie was the lowest bidder, so the more competitive. And I think that in terms of energy, so in terms of tariff, it's the difference between Engie and AES, that is the second lowest one, is more than 30%. Actually, it's close to 40%, the difference.
So does that mean that Engie bid a lower price than everybody else?
Engie proposed the lowest tariff compared to the other tender. This value that is, around $110 per megawatt hour is very close to the reference that we had at the time, that was our benchmark, because in 2019, in January, the Hawaiian Electrical Company, so the utility in Hawaii, disclosed the value, the tariff in Hawaii, and all the and we already know that, all the proposal, the project in Hawaii in terms of size were very similar to these two projects in one, and this, all the tariff were, let me say, also a little bit lower. So they were awarded with the tariff that is always less than $100 per megawatt hour. Is between $80 per megawatt hour and $108 per megawatt hour. So that values at the time was the benchmark for everybody bidding PV plus storage. So we use this as a benchmark to optimize our system. We was a little bit higher than the benchmark using the Y for a lot of reasons. Irradiation, ITC. ITC is the investment tax credit. So there are a couple of reasons. In Hawaii, radiation is a little bit higher, so we was not able to match exactly our target, the benchmark. But we was confident that our proposal was competitive.
Okay. I just have a couple questions to end on. You said earlier that you read the IFB and the amendments. Was there anything that you read that limited the PV modules to 20.7 megawatt peak?
No, I think no. Also, conversely, there is a clear requirement from GPA to try to maximize the PV capacity. So, in other words, GPA has to do the opposite. Instead of saying that there is a limit, GPA asks bidders to maximize the PV capacity and the PV field more in general to maximize the size. So there was no specific limit for the amount of module or megawatt peak for the bidders. Conversely, there is the requirement to try to maximize this value.
And just one last question. This east-west configuration that you mentioned, how did this help Engie maximize that?
Yeah, as I said before, the east-west configuration is one of the configurations that helps Peter to try to maximize the size. In other words, with same hectares, with east-west configuration, we can install more megawatt peak. With respect, for instance, a south phase configuration, with the south phase configuration, we are able to install in the same land, in the same hectares, less megawatt peak. So was able to maximize our site. We made a lot of simulation, a lot of iterative calculation, if you understand, which is the best one. And then, so we was able to maximize our PV capacity. Maximize our PV capacity means to have more energy. Then we need to adapt the size of the ESS, because, I mean, doesn't matter if you increase your energy, then you need to store in the ESS and then release. So if you increase the megawatt peak, then you need to increase, I mean, to properly design the ESS. So we adapted the capacity of the ESS, and then we was able to increase the value of the generation. That is one of the drivers of the economics for this kind of project. So as we can see from this table, the amount of gigawatt hour, that is the amount of energy injected into the grid during the year, during the first year in this case, was 42 Assault Finnegan and a little bit more at Nava base. That is much more than the other builders. And this is one of the drivers, okay, of the, is not the only one, to be honest, but one of the drivers for the optimization of the economics.
Okay. You said that was the first year. What is the total amount of time for this project?
It's a 20-year contract.
Okay, now, GPA mentioned an issue about degradation on panels and other equipment. Was that addressed in the design that ENGIE has in this project?
Yes, sure. The degradation, I mean, we have two kinds of degradation for this PV plus storage plan. There is one degradation that is on the PV module. I mean, the PV module lose a little the capability to produce energy during time. So it's already, I mean, this kind of values, how much of energy in percent the PV module lose during each year are already, I mean, well defined by manufacturer. And there are typical values that is more or less between 0.4-0.5% each year. So in our, we take into account this in our calculation, so the value that we, the generation that we have in our model, in our financial model, in order to evaluate which is the tariff, take into account these losses, this degradation during the year. And there is also degradation on the battery side, also battery size cycling. I mean, the more the battery will cycle, the more there is some degradation. Even in this case, there is already some way to foresee and try to estimate the degradation. In this case, we have, modeled our ESS, and we have an operating profile day by day. So we have an hourly profile of the ESS. This was able, with this modeling, okay, we was able to share with the manufacturer. And together with the manufacturer, we estimated, which is the degradation, so the percent of capacity lost by the battery each year is really linked to the operating profile.
So is there any plan to do anything about the degradation during the course of the 20-year project?
Yes, I mean, depending on how the project is built and designed, also depending on which is the configuration, if you want to, I mean, typically it's interest of the bidders, also from the client to try to, at a certain point, compensate this degradation in order to, because of course, if you have a battery that, and you just give the battery to degrade, then your energy that you're able to inject into the grid will be lower. So it's interest of the bidder, also in the of the company to try to a certain point try to compensate this degradation with new capacity for battery, especially. Okay, so you know again, this is very simple, very common for, I mean, all the PV plus storage plan in a wide project we did the same. So we have studied a top-up strategy. It means that according to the degradation curve that we have estimated with the client, at a certain point we try to add capacity in order to compensate the loss of the battery capacity. So we uh, also this was part of our optimization process, because this loss of capacity from the battery is one of the drivers. Okay, it has a huge impact on the energy that you are able to deliver into the grid. So we really optimized this value.
Okay, thank you. We don't have any further questions at this time. We will pass on.
Good morning. My name is Joe Rosano, and I represent GlidePath in this case. Can you hear me?
Yes. Okay. Good morning.
Good. Would you mind if I just called you Dario?
Yes.
Okay, thanks. And then you can call me Joe if you have, you know, something to say, okay?
Okay.
All right, so I'm looking at the chart that you talked about with respect to pricing, and you said that AES, which was the closest bidder, was about 40% higher than ANGI. Do you recall that?
Si ricordo di te, vuole che le traduco o no?
Yes, please.
Okay. Allora, era circa 45% più alto come offerta quello del suo competitore. Si ricorda questo?
Yes.
And if you look at KEPCO Hanwha, they're like, I don't know, like 200% higher than your bid. Do you agree or disagree?
E lei è d'accordo che KEPCO Hanwha era circa 200% più alto della sua offerta? Lei è d'accordo con questo oppure non è d'accordo?
Yeah, I mean, these are the values, but as I said before, I mean, we just use the benchmark that we had, the benchmark for every player in this field. The benchmark at that time was the value disclosed by ICO. And as I said before, the benchmark for this kind of project, renewable, so PV plus CSS, was also cheaper than it was. I mean, the tariff in Hawaii was lower than our tariff.
Oh, well.
Oh,
back.
Back.
Oh, okay,
you're still there, right? Okay.
Yes.
Thank you. Did you find it surprising that all of these bidders were so much higher than ANGI?
Lei ha trovato sorprendente che tutti questi offerenti erano tanto più alto che l'offerta di ANGI?
I mean, I was just happy that our proposal was lower than the other. I don't know.
So you weren't surprised. You think that's normal?
Lei non era sorpreso. Trova che questo sia normale?
No, I don't know. I mean, I work on my proposal, probably there was some misunderstanding for the other bidders, which is the level of the, the benchmark for this kind of project. As I said before, we were a clear benchmark, and we really work a lot in order to try to match this benchmark. And I said before, we was not able to make the benchmark. So in our opinion, our offer was good, but not so good, because we didn't match exactly the benchmark that we had at the time.
Now, I thought I heard you say earlier the increase in the value of the generation is the driver of the economic model. Is that correct?
È vero che lei ha detto prima che l'aumento nel valore della generazione, la produzione, ha un effetto sul valore del progetto, vero?
It's one of the two.
Okay. So, can we go to the next? I think the next one had the actual capacity, right? Or the previous one, I mean. Is that the one?
Sorry, it's been kind of slow. This one?
Maybe this one. That's okay. Okay, so this is at the bottom of this slide. It says GlidePath limited PV megawatt DC capacities. Right? You see that?
Ha visto che dove c'è scritto che Vlad ha limitato le capacità PD e DG?
Yes, I see.
Okay, so that's that, and then you give a list of each South Finnegan and Naval Base, and those are the megawatt peaks of the projects, correct?
Queste a tutti e due i siti, South Finnegan e l'altro, sono i megawatt peak del progetto, vero?
Yeah, they're megawatt peak, correct.
So, I mean, like, for example, Exilio is only two, and I know you said there's a mistake on that one, but just for the sake of argument, if you look at them together, the Angie and Exilio and South Finnegan, there's only 2 megawatt peak difference, essentially, correct?
Tra voi due, Exilio e Angie, c'è solo una differenza di 2 megawatt picco, vero?
Yeah, there are just 2 megawatt difference, but I mean the effect
like,
of
they were like 100% higher than your bid.
Yeah, I was just saying that the effect of the megawatt peak is not linear. I mean we are oversimplifying. We are saying that 2 megawatt peak more it means 2% more of energy. I mean it's not yet linear, the effect. I mean, in order to evaluate the impact of the new capacity of 2 megawatt peak and the energy produced by this additional energy produced by this 2 megawatt peak, then you need to run a financial economical model. And more importantly, as I said before, more energy does not necessarily mean more, a cheaper tariff, because more energy, but then you have to store in the ESS and to release. So you need to adapt the ESS each time you then change the megawatt peak. So if you are proposing a configuration which the megawatt peak and the capacity of the ESS are not optimized together, then it doesn't matter how many megawatt peak you install.
The limitation that is described in the second requirement essentially limits the power going into the battery, correct?
È vero che i limiti che sono descritti nella seconda limita la potenza che entra nella batteria, vero? L'energia?
The requirement number two is more to be sure that the charging rate and discharging rate are designed properly, okay? If the exact wording used by GPA is that the charging phase or the ESS megawatt rate on the ESS should be equal to more than the 145% of PV charging system. So it's like the opposite. But then, of course, once you have fixed the ESS megawatt rating, then it means that you have a maximum value on the PV charging system.
When you looked at all the bids from KEPCO, AES, Exilio, did any of those, I guess three, did any of those three bidders adhere to the requirement number two?
Hanno rispettato il requisito numero due per queste tre offerenti, Exilio e le altre due società, quando lei ha guardato queste offerte?
It's not so easy to answer because, we saw before Engie listed the requirements and we confirmed clearly that we are full compliant with the requirement.
I just want to know if you said you looked at the bids, and I just wanted to know if, in your opinion, either KEPCO, Hanwha, AES, or Exilio met that 20.7 requirement. And if you don't know, you could just say, I don't know. I didn't read it that carefully.
Voglio solo sapere se quando ho guardato queste offerte, queste tre società per Hanwha e Exilio hanno rispettato questa obbligazione o requisito. E se non lo sa, lo può dire.
The 20.7 megawatt was not the limit, so we cannot just look at the values and see if they are below or more than 20.7, because 20.7 was just a claim for glide path, but in reality was not a requirement from the BIM, from the IFB. The real requirement is 145%. And in my opinion, the bidders, AES, Excelio, and Capcom, for what I read from the procurement, the file in the procurement record, that somehow I'm not very clear about, for what I read from the in the file in the procurement record, for me, KEPCO, AES, and Excelio are complying with the requirements. It does not mean that they are, as you say, I mean, complying with the 20.7, because for me the 20.7 is not a limit. So the requirement was the 145%, not the 20.7.
Well, explain to me then, I think you're going to have to explain to me again, what is the limit? Because in your hearing brief and in your testimony today, you said there were three requirements. The first one was the 30 megawatt AC. Remember that?
Allora, si ricordo che nel primo requisito ha parlato dei 30 megawatt AC, a corrente alternativa, vero? Mi può spiegare che cosa sono questi limiti, allora?
Yes, the first one is the 30 megawatt C at tank connection point. The second one is, as I said before, a ratio between the charging phase and the discharging phase, and this ratio is 145%. So if you we cannot say that the requirement 2 means a 20.7 limit. For instance, in our P, since we have a 30 megawatt of ESS megawatt rating, then the limit on the PV charging system is 20.7, because 30 over 145 is 20.7. We cannot say the same for all bidders because they have different design.
Okay, so is it a limit on the charging system or not? I am very unclear what you said. Yesterday, your boss told me that as long as you could restrict, you had a restrictor plate on your engine and you could restrict...
I'm sorry, counselor, could you let me get through that first half?
Yes, ma'am.
Yeah, se c'è un limite sul sistema di carico, mi può spiegare come funziona questo? Non sono chiaro che ho capito questo. Could you continue with the second? Thank you.
Okay, let's try this. Let's try this. Yesterday, your boss told me that the 20.7 was a limitation, and the way he explained it to me was that you put a restrictor plate on the engine of a car, and that the nameplate rating was how fast the car could go. You know, ma'am, I appreciate that, but he speaks English, and I need to be able to ask these questions.
I understand. If you could just give me a little pause in the middle, it would help.
Okay, let's start again. Yesterday, your boss told me that the PV charging system was like an engine.
Ieri, suo boss mi ha detto che il sistema di carico PV era come una specie di motore che carica.
Then he explained to me that the nameplate rating of the engine, in your case, your charging system, would be 24.
E poi mi ha spiegato che la capacità, la potenza nominale del sistema di carico era, go ahead.
And then he told me that what that was doing was limiting the amount of power that was being pulled out of the PV modules or the PV array.
E questo limitava la quantità di potenza o di energia che veniva estratto dal sistema PV.
So,
o la schiera PV.
Do you consider that to be a limitation?
Allora le domando, lei considera che questa è una limitazione?
As I was doing my testimony, I just read what we have written in our proposal. In our proposal, we written that the maximum power that can be used to charge the ESS is 20.7. Just because this in our the rating value of our PV charging system, to use the wording used by GPA, is 20.7. So this is a limitation. In our design, it was a limitation. So we designed the system to be compliant with this limitation. That is, the maximum power that you can inject into the ESS is 20.7. But this value 20.7 is in our proposal. It's not and requirements for each finder, because this comes from requirement number two. And the requirement number two does not talk about 20.7. The requirement number two is a 24.5% ratio between the discharge and the charge, between the ESS megawatt rating and the PV charging system.
So then, is that limitation reflected in Hanwha KEPCO's bid?
Allora, questa limitazione si riflette nell'offerta di Hanwha KEPCO?
Yeah, I said before, in my opinion, the offer from KEPCO AES Inseio are compliant with the 145% ratio.
Okay. So if I go back and I read those bids, I'll find their compliance. Is that right?
Allora, se io riguardo queste loro offerte, troverò questa conformità da parte loro, vero?
For the documentation I've seen, for me they are compliant. It does not mean that if you look at the document, you realize that they are compliant, because as I said before, as Engie, we clearly say that we are compliant. The other competitors wrote the technical proposal as they prepared. So
you're saying I might read it because I'm a lawyer and I don't know what to do with engineering. I wouldn't be able to tell it was compliant. But if I had...
Allora, io come avvocato, guardando questo, leggendolo, non potrei capire se era conforme o no, dato che sono avvocato. Ma se avevo... Go ahead.
But if I had an engineer read it, they would be able to tell me clearly that it's compliant, correct?
Però se lo facevo leggere da un ingegnere, loro mi potrebbero dire chiaramente se era in conformità, non è vero?
Yeah, from a technical reading, I think it can be reasonably say that the KEPCO ASXL are compliant with the requirements.
Okay, and it's so easy to find that no matter what engineer I ask, they will read those bids and they will say, yes, Joe, they're compliant.
È talmente facile trovare che qualsiasi ingegnere che lo legge mi dirà, sì, Joe, quando lo leggi capisce chiaramente che queste sono in conformità.
In our proposal, yes, as I said before. From the other proposal, it's not so easy because it's not always clearly written, so you need to collect different pieces of information from technical documentation and then put together different information from the different part of the docs and then make a judgment of this kind of information.
Okay, but if I give the engineer I'm going to give these reports to, if I give them to them, same stuff you read, nothing different, just what you read, they're going to come up with the same exact assessment that they complied with the 20.7 limitation, correct?
Allora, se io le do gli stessi rapporti di quello che ha letto lei, loro avranno lo stesso risultato, cioè risulterebbe 20.7 in conformità.
I'd just like to make an objection for the record on this. The issue again before the public auditor is whether our invitation for bid, our unpriced annual proposal met the requirements of the invitation for bid. Not whether anybody else's did. The issue here is whether we were whether we met the requirements. Though. So, I mean, I've let him go on about this and he's asked the same question about three or four times.
Actually, I'd like to respond. The issue now, while I don't disagree with you, the issue now is this man's credibility. That's the issue, because he's not answering the questions correctly.
Io trovo che l'affidabilità di questa persona davanti a me ora, questa è la questione, non soltanto quella degli altri, sta dicendo l'interrogatore.
I'll allow you to continue to ask your question.
I think you had page 2447 up there. 20, I wrote down 2447. Yeah, whatever you could add up earlier. Okay. Can you see page 2447?
Lo vede le pagine 2447?
Yes.
Can you tell me, what is the definition of a PV plant?
Qual è la definizione di un'installazione fotovoltaica?
Okay. For me, PV plant is, some components of the PV plant are modules. Then there is the mechanical parts, so for instance, the structure of the module. Then there is a converter after the module. And then it depends on which is the configuration. Then, for instance, in a pure PV plant, after the inverter, there is then the step-up transformer, substation, and then it's there is the interconnection point. In this kind of plant, for PV plus ESS, after the inverter, then there is the, let me say, the substation that is in common between PV and ESS. So from after the inverter, what is included in the PV plant, just for the specifically for the PV plant, may be different, but it's always, for sure, there is always module, a structure for the module, and the converter.
Okay, and then the next phase would be the battery.
E poi la prossima fase sarebbe la batteria, vero?
In one project, yes.
Did you, you said you were on the technical team that prepared the proposal, is that correct?
Lei era col team tecnico che ha preparato la proposta, vero?
Correct.
And were you involved in this page, this C2 dispatchability page?
E lei faceva parte di questa pagina sulla programmabilità?
C2? Yes.
Okay.
Yes, correct.
After the colon, you know, where it says the plant is designed to charge the BESS with a maximum combined power rate of 20.7 and to discharge it at 30 megawatts at the delivery point, these values have been selected in compliance with the following requirement. That requirement that you list under there, you just copied that directly from GPA's bid, is that correct?
Lei ha copiato questo requisito, questa esigenza direttamente dall'offerta di Engie, vero? Cioè quello del 20,7 e 30 megawatt. L'ha copiato quello che lui viene di leggere.
Could you zoom in a little bit, please? I'm not able to see the exact wording.
Yeah.
It's very small.
Yes, we're going to make it bigger. He's going to show you what I read to you was the top, and then what I'm asking you is, you see the citation, multi-step bid GPA-007-18, you see that?
Lo vede dove c'è scritto la sua offerta? Yes.
Okay, and you cited it like that because you copied it from the bid, correct?
E lei lo ha citato in questo modo perché l'aveva copiato dalla vostra offerta.
We use the exact wording used by GPA in the page 160.
Thank you. Right, let's get 2397, I think you had up just before that. No questions on that. Now the Hawaii project that you discussed, that project's never been constructed, is that correct?
Il progetto di Hawaii che lei ha discusso prima non è mai stato costruito, vero?
Well, it is awarded this year, 2020, so.
And the Palau project is still in the, I guess, really in the bid phase, correct?
E il progetto a Palau è ancora in fase della gara d'appalto, vero?
Yes, correct.
Okay, so that one's not built.
Allora, quello non è costruito.
The
Spain project, I was a little bit, I couldn't understand it. The Litra project, you said it was a coal power plant? Maybe you need to explain that a little bit better. I didn't understand what you testified to.
Non ho capito quello che lei ha testimoniato parlando dell'impianto che era Litra, il progetto spagnolo, ma lo può spiegare meglio?
The Litra power plant is, in Litra there is an existing power plant, there is a conventional power plant, there is a coal power plant in Litra in Spain. Then this power plant is owned by Enel. As I said, is one of the biggest utilities worldwide. Then Enel launched a tender in order to couple with this thermoelectric power plant with the ESS. The size of the ESS, it was a 20 megawatt ESS. The project was one of the biggest at the time. It was in 2017. The aim of the ESS was to help the coal power plant that all the coal power plants are less flexible with respect to a battery storage system, to help the ESS to provide some ancillary services that require some fast response. And the ESS, the function of the ESS was to support this kind of ancillary services required by the owner of the grid, in order and that mandatory for the any kind of plan to be connected to the grid. So it is an ESS of 20 megawatt ESS coupled with the thermoelectric power plant. Okay.
Photovoltaic, right? No.
Photovoltaic,
vero. What's the energy generation? I don't understand.
Qual è la generazione dell'energia?
Was an ESS standalone, so was not coupled with a renewable project like PV. Was an ESS standalone, and ESS is not a generation facility. It's just a system that can shift energy. And the generation in that case was a conventional power plant. But the aim of the ESS was not to generate power, was to provide some ancillary services like fast frequency response, like reactive power response, and try to balance the instability on the grid, providing some response and ancillary services for voltage and frequency. So that was the the end of it.
Thank you. That's much more clear. I think you told us when you were letting us know a little bit about your history. You said that basically you do design work for ESS. So your expertise, is in energy storage systems. Is that right?
La sua expertise nei sistemi di stoccaggio accumulo energia, che lei fa i progetti della SSE, vero? Ci ha detto prima.
My job is to design, model the energy storage system, but not just, let me say, energy storage system itself. For instance, in the one project, there is a very strict correlation between the PV and the ESS. So, and what we have done was to model the overall plan, okay? Because it's not possible to just optimize the ESS without knowing what is doing the PV. So when we optimize this kind of plan, this combined plan, so PV plus storage, we need to optimize the overall plan, not just one part of the plan. But I mean, I'm for Guam, there were two technical teams, one in Paris, more focused on the PV, one in Milan that is NGPS, more focused on the ESS.
Okay, yes. What does ENGIE-EPS primarily do?
Che cosa fa ENGIE-EPS principalmente?
We design and restore system, PV plus storage, microgrids. We provide we have a lot of and very strong knowledge about the control technique of the of this kind of plan. So for, as I said before, in the project in California, we are providing the mercury controller. So it's the controller of the old mercury. It is a 12 megawatt mercury. And we are able to control all the generation facilities in this mercury. So the PV, the ESS, and try and make sure that the generation size is matching the load. So we are able to dispatch in the optimal way the energy produced by the generation capacity and to try to respect always the stability of the system. So we have a very strong experience in this, very strong experience in design energy storage systems and hybridization of projects like PV plus storage project. I hope it's clear.
Thank you, yes. And how does how does NGEPS support NG Solar?
E come sostiene NG Solar la NGEPS?
Yes, as I said before, we work really together. The NG Solar team was, the technical team was in Paris. Then there was another team in India, more on the project management, procurement, on-site activities. And then for one project, we had like a weekly call and then a lot of workshop in Paris and Milan to really work together and to optimize our system. Then we went together on site. The first time I was in Guam, I was together with the project manager of this project, that is Prakash Morankar from NG Solar. It was the project manager from NG Solar for this kind for one project. We had, as I said before, at least two or three workshops together with NG Solar in order to, I mean, try to prepare and putting together this bid.
Okay, so I guess what I'm trying to figure out is when you said you, like, in the California case, you provided the controller. In this case, you were going to provide the battery to NG Solar. Is that right?
Allora, lei ha detto che nel caso di California lei ha fornito il controllore. Invece, in questo caso, lei ha fornito le batterie, vero?
I think you are mixing up things, and the project in California is together with NG Service US, that is not NG Solar, and together with NG Service US, we as NG are providing to the client, that is a local utility, we are providing the PV, we are providing the ESS, and we are providing the microcontroller.
When you looked at the AES, no, I apologize. Let me start over. When you looked at the KEPCO Hanwha proposal, was that an AC coupled project?
Quando lei guarda la proposta di KEPCO Hanwha, questo era un progetto accoppiato AC?
I think yes. Again, it's I say yes because I remember that there were just two inverters, one for the solar and one for the ESS.
Was that the same for the Exilio project, also AC coupled?
E questo era lo stesso per il progetto Exilio, cioè un accoppiamento AC?
Yes, it's not the same, of course, the same technology, same. SM design, but I remember that there is an AC coupling. But let me just add one comment that reading the document, I was not really focused on trying to understand if this AC or DC, because I mean, in reality, this DC coupling is not a requirement from IFB. It's not written in the IFB that the project shall be this DC coupling. It's not written in the original IFB, it's not written in the Amendment 13 with the additional requirements provided in the Amendment 13. There were a couple of clarifications, okay, in the Amendment 17, I guess, in which GPA clarified that the DC coupling was not a requirement, okay. We proposed a DC coupling just because we realized that this, it can be more efficient, but in principle, the IFP, as all the IFP I work with, are technology neutral. So IFB don't fix a limit on the technology that the bidder can propose. It's up to bidder to find the best one. We decided that the best one was the DC coupling. But for me, the DC coupling was not a requirement. It was just, I mean, the, in my opinion, the best way to do. And Glide GPA wrote this in the in one of the clarification.
Okay. So that's how you read it, that it was not a required DC coupled project. Is that correct?
Allora lei l'ha letto in questo modo che non era un progetto che obbligava l'accoppiamento DC.
It's not like I, it's not my understanding. I mean, there is no a requirement in the IFB saying that DC coupling is mandatory or it's required. From how the system has to be, I mean, from the other requirements, how GPA want to use this system, for me, it's a DC coupling is more convenient than AC coupling, but it's not a requirement. And I think that one of the clarifications GPS specifically said that DC coupling is not required, but is, let's say, suggested. So it's not a mandatory requirement in response to a clarification from Peter. The DC coupling is not a requirement, maybe suggested, but I mean, it's up to Peter to find the best optimal solution, okay, for this problem.
If you were to remove the 20.7 limitation from the charging system.
Se lei dovesse togliere questa 20.7 limite dal sistema di ricarica.
And let's say that requirement was adjusted to 21 or 22.
E diciamo che questo requisito si reglava dal 21-22 invece.
You could produce more power to flow into the battery, is that correct?
Lei potrebbe produrre più potere, più energia che poi entrerebbe nella batteria, vero? Come erogazione.
It's not entirely correct. I mean, in principle, of course, if you don't have a limitation on the PV charging system, you have more potential power. But we designed an ESS together with this 20.7 megawatts. So the ESS is as a fixed capacity. So doesn't matter if then a certain point I decide to find 145% and 146 megawatt hour for the ESS because I have 20.7 megawatt on the charging side. If I have more on the charging side, it does not mean that I have more energy because my at the end of the day, my ESS is full. So if I have more energy on the charging side, it means just that we full charge before the ESS. But then I mean, the extra energy that you are mentioning is not useful because the ESS is full.
I see. So by the 20.7 limit, you'll be able to fill the battery every day.
Allora, con limite del 20.7, lei può ricaricare o riempire la batteria ogni giorno.
Yeah, the design was made to, I mean, as required by GPA, the ESS should be able time shift all the produced energy by the PV. I mean, of course, in days in which the weather is bad in Guam, the PV is not able to full charge the ESS. This is the only variable I have.
The PV module degradation that you discussed earlier, that's just kind of a normal irradiation degradation that happens to all panels, regardless of what kind of panel it is or what wattage it is. Is that correct?
La degradazione del modulo PV di cui lei ha parlato prima, questa è una degradazione normale che accade in tutti i vari sistemi, vero?
The degradation is common. I mean, there are power PV plants working many, many years, so it's something that it was already clarified by manufacturer. The value, okay, of the degradation, it depends on the technology. Okay, there are some technology that have a little bit more more aging, and other technology that have less aging. Depends, of course, on the kind of panels, monocrystalline, polycrystalline. I mean, there are many possibility. I mean, honestly, I'm not. I'm more focused on the ESS, so I cannot tell you so much. But I can tell you that definitely it's like a common value, but it depends on the kind of technology for the PV that you are considering.
Dario, thank you very much for your time. I have no further questions for you. I think maybe there might be some follow-up questions, and I'm certainly going to turn you over to GPA's counsel to determine if they'd like to ask anything. Thank you for your time this morning.
La ringrazio per il suo tempo e adesso cambiamo alla GPA.
Thank you, Mr. Provigador. We do not have any questions for Dario. Thank you.
I have a few questions on redirect, if I may. Dario, first I'd like to talk about this DC coupled solution issue that came up during your through the questions from Mr. Rosano. You mentioned some clarification, I think, that GPA did in the amendments. I'd like to go over those. I think you said the first one was Amendment 13. Let me see if I can find it and post it for you. 17. So do you see the question in front of you? And for the record, this is GlidePath Exhibit 5-14. We're talking about question 37. Where the question is asked, document reference general, could you please confirm if the BESS and the PV need to be DC coupled? And what is GPA's answer?
Yeah, the answer from GPA was all PV components must be behind the energy storage system. DC coupled between PV and ESS is recommended to reduce any losses due to conversion.
So that word there, it says recommended, yes?
Yeah, it's recommended, and in the IFB, in the main IFB document, and in the Amendment 13, in the section which GPA added some technical requirements, there are no requirements for the DC coupling. The requirement is PV components must be behind the energy storage system. This is the requirement set by GPA. But they never mentioned the DC coupling to be required.
Okay, you mentioned. Sorry, I'm just trying to reconnect. Can you see the exhibit?
Yes.
Okay, I'm going to go to Amendment 13 now. Okay. And I want to bring your attention to the question at the top of the page, which is question 6.3. Where it states, it was mentioned at the pre-bid meeting that the PV system must be connected to the ESS via a DC connection, and that the systems cannot each have independent inverters and share a common AC bus that is then connected to GPA system. Please confirm if this is a requirement, and if so, why? Also, if it is a requirement, why would GPA consider a project that includes the ESS and PV connected via an AC bus, but with sufficient protection/control systems in place to prevent unintended transfer of energy directly from the PV system to GPA system? What was the answer here?
Yeah, the answer from GPA was the GPA system is an isolated electrical system with minimal short circuit energy available to the grid. The use of a C-connected inverter on the PV system increased the short circuit requirement in the GPI system, and such limits the amount of renewable energy inverter that can be connected to GPI system without any additional short circuit mitigation. Should the seller wish to connect the PV system through an AC in Asher, the AC system must be totally isolated from the GPA AC system. GPA, all interconnection with the seller AC system shall be through the inverter of the ESS.
So did you see So
basically here, GPA is confirming that the requirement is that the PV must be behind the ESS, and that should be the ESS to be directly connected to the grid. And here GPA explains also the rationale behind, because there is some concern about the stability of the grid, the short circuit ratio that the PV inverter need in order to be connected to the grid, and the use of PV inverter alone will probably, in the view of GPA, will be less optimal, okay, in terms of stability of the grid for the grid. So the real requirement is the PV shall be behind the ESS.
So did you see this to mean that you could not use DC to AC converters?
No, because also in the answer, GPA like open gives a little bit of flexibility to the bidders to find some solution, because the real concern is the stability of the grid. Then whatever solution you can find and that is able to mitigate the potential lack of stability on the grid. From this answer, I understand the GPA is at least open to accept some other configuration, okay? But of course, the GPA want to be sure that this configuration does not affect negatively the stability of the grid.
Okay. Now I want to go and talk about a different topic. There was some back and forth between you and Mr. Rosano about, I think, what he referred to as a 20.7 limitation. I think you were saying something about a ratio. How do you understand requirement number two to work then in terms of a ratio?
Yeah, the requirement number two that is introduced in the amendment 13, it's a ratio between the PV charging system and the ESS megawatt rating. To use the exact wording from GPA, the ESS megawatt rating shall be equal to greater than 145% of the megawatt rating of the PV charging system. So first of all, the requirement is more or on the ESS part, okay? So when bidders design the plan, bidders should pay attention to the fact that the the megawatt rating of the ESS shall be equal to 145% of the PV charging system. Okay, so this is the requirement. So it's not an absolute a requirement in absolute terms. So there is no written that the limit is 20.7. The limit depends on the PV charging system, depends on which is the megawatt rating of the ESS. So this is just a link between two values. It's not an absolute a limit in absolute terms.
Okay, so for instance then, if the megawatt rating of the ESS is less than 30 megawatts, would you expect that you would have to install a PV charging system that is rated at less than 20.7 megawatts?
Yeah, if megawatt rating of the ESS is less than 30, then the megawatt rating of the PV charging system is less than 20.7. 20.7, just to be clear, is just 30 over 145. So if instead of 30 we use a lower number, a smaller number, then the limit on the PV charging system will be lower than 20.7. And also if we use a higher number, because the maximum value for the ESS megawatt rating is 40 megawatt. So in principle, the megawatt rating of the PV charging system can be also more than 20.7 if the megawatt rating of the ESS is more than 30.
Thank you, Dario. I don't have any more questions at this time.
Thanks.
Please.
Question 37?
Yeah, is that the one we were talking about? Okay. Dario, if I had to build a power, one of these photovoltaic systems, and the requirement was that I had to have all of my PV components behind the ESS, explain to me how I could build an AC-coupled system.
Allora, se io dovessi costruire un sistema PV e avevo tutti i componenti come requisiti dietro l'SSL, mi devi spiegare come potrebbe costruire questo sistema copiato?
Ok, I'd like to start from the how GlidePath proposed this system. So in GlidePath proposal,
I don't want to know about GlidePath. I want to build my own system, and the
I need to give an example, by the way, because otherwise it's impossible to describe this. Most of the let me say that the most common DC coupling system is like a PV module, the battery, then there is a DC-DC converter on a battery, and the inverter that is between, I mean, is for the same inverter is between battery and PV, okay? Then there is the transformer, and then there is the interconnection point. And this is how GlidePath designed the system, okay? PV, battery, DC-DC converter for the battery, and the same inverter for PV and battery. And this is not our proposal, by the way, okay? This is GlidePath proposal. We have proposed something different. If instead of having a DC-DC converter, in GlidePath proposal is an inverter, then it's exactly the same configuration for an AC coupling system and DC coupling system. They are completely the same. Okay, the only difference in terms of architecture, the only difference then is that instead of having a DC-DC converter for the battery, I have a DC-AC inverter. Then there is the inverter for the PV and the transformer and so on. And this, so the difference between these two topology is only the efficiency of the time shifting. It means that in a DC coupling system, if I want to charge the battery with the PV, then I have to produce the energy from the PV, and then this energy go to the DC-DC converter and the inverter. So there is just one component between the PV module and the battery, okay? So I have a certain amount of losses. If I replace the DC-DC converter with a DC-AC inverter, I need to go from the PV to the inverter of the PV field to the transformer, to the other transformer for the PV, to the DC-DC converter, and to the battery. So I have much more component in between PV and BESS, and the losses every time the energy flowing through into the device, there is a losses. So the losses will increase. But in terms of topology, they are exactly the same.
So are you saying then that if I had all of the PV components behind the ESS, I could still build an AC coupled system? If that's the answer, just say that's the answer.
Cioè, se avevo tutti i componenti dietro la ESS, potrei, ha capito la seconda parte?
Yes. Yeah, for me, The BSS, the PV to be behind the SS is not necessarily mean DC coupling. Of course, it's as I said, for me, it's better to have a DC coupling, but that's not necessarily mean. There are other topology that they are not optimized, but there are other topology that can be still used.
In the GPA IFB, they required that the PV not be connected directly to the grid. Is that correct?
È vero che la PV non doveva essere connessa direttamente alla rete come requisito nell'invito alla gara della GPA.
Correct. And as I said before, the difference between the DC coupling for instance, of the topology that I described before, the glide path, so a module, a solar inverter, a DC-DC converter for the battery, and the battery. This is no different with having, instead of a DC-DC converter, an inverter. So in terms of how the PV is connecting to the grid, does not change. And the PV is not directly connected to the grid. There are the transformer and the substation in between.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Dario. We're done.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Palmer.
Yes, thank you, Ms.
Palmer.
Thank you.
Probably midnight.
Thank you so much. Thank you very much,
Ms.
Palmer.
Thank you. Are you closing down?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you. Have a good one.
Public Auditor, I do have a housekeeping matter to address. Mr. Rosano provided me, you know, this afternoon before we started, about 15 minutes before we started, a motion for order staying the proceedings. No problems, before the OPA. At the same time, he didn't bother to bring it with him, but he served on GPA a third protest in this matter regarding the procurement record. I find that offensive, okay? Bring it to me, serve it to me here. Serve it to me when he knows I've already left with the thing. A third protest and thing. Two was bad enough. A third protest. Is this another delay tactic?
No, we hadn't received the documents, so we filed a protest to protect our rights.
The OPA is hearing this matter. If there's something that we've done wrong, I expect that you would certainly address it. I don't know why there was a need for another protest. I got an email to me, that's why I have it on my phone here. Or thought at least the courtesy of bringing it here, we could address it.
Well, all we did was protect our rights. I mean, we can address it.
Well, let's address it on Tuesday. All right?
I mean,
yeah, we'll just everything.
I understand that you're on, but normally, obviously, the agency has to respond to a protest.
I understand.
I'm not sure how we would do that when the matter is already before you. And, I mean, so then we would respond and then we'd have another delay where we would start yet again. That's why I find it troublesome.
Let's deal with the filing on Tuesday. I'll not be requiring your response in 5 days. Everything's just on hold. Tuesday will.
So there's no. So I guess if I get that correctly, my God, there will be no response expected from GPA to respond
on Tuesday.
To
no, just we'll talk about this on Tuesday, so that you can have a chance to see it. You'll have a chance to see it. I'll have a chance to see it, and then we'll talk.
Well, I mean, unless you expect me to file it, it's not been served before the OPA. It was only
it's a protest.
Or you have 14 days to respond.
It's a protest, not an appeal.
Yes, it's an agency level protest.
It's not before us yet.
It's not.
It was, Your Honor, if I may, I just want to make sure I'm clear with both on this. since we didn't have the documents and we were concerned about this matter, you know, we being compelled to have to put a rebuttal witness on today, we didn't have the documents. In order to make sure that we dotted all the I's and crossed all the T's, made sure we had protected our clients' rights about this procurement record issue, we did file an agency-level protest. I think as the public auditor and Mr. Wilk is well aware, there's no immediate statutory timeline on when the agency has to respond to that. The procurement rules and regulations require the parties to talk to each other. It suggests that the agency can talk with the bidder about that protest. We simply did that to preserve our rights. The motion about the stay that was filed right before this hearing, I think we actually referenced that we're doing that protest in that, right? If Mr. Botha's agency was actually at the Dulali Center and we could have got a stamp and, you know, our runner could have done that, instead of having to go up to Pocket for an agency level protest, we would have had those documents. I would have had paper copies to do it. There's nothing nefarious here. It was just simply in case we had to close the matter today to make sure we put our record marker down that we didn't have the documents. Mr. Botha provided documents today at the hearing. If we go through that and we think there's nothing much to do about nothing about this procurement agency level protest, we'll deal with that. But there is nothing, there is no statutory timeline that's triggered here, my understanding of the rule. And to the extent that Mr. Bolton wants as much time as necessary to do that, we can talk about it. But there's nothing for this office to do. We're happy to address it on Tuesday, but this is just a procurement agency level protest and a letter that we sent to the agency. That's all it is.
Okay. Let's recess until 9 o'clock on Tuesday.
Just one additional housekeeping matter. Can we just make sure that any exhibits that we referenced are part of the record? Just to get that on the record.
No objection to that.
No objection.
Okay. And, yeah. Oh, can you take your computers with you? I don't. Over the weekend, I don't want if anything should happen to anybody's equipment. Because I have a training in here on Monday.
Yes, sir. Take your ready.
So 9 a.m. Tuesday?
We're off the record at 5:19 p.m.